Power Records presents...
Another exciting episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is...
Chris Franklin, in his satin tights, fighting for your rights, in the old red, white, and blue.
I love that song. We're here to do our Wonder Woman episode. Chris, I didn't do the research like I should have, which is, you know, of course, but I think the first time we talked about doing a Wonder Woman episode for the movie was like 2 years ago. I think we first mentioned it because we had heard that they were going to maybe do a Wonder Woman movie. And I think you and I said, oh, you know what? We'll have to do a Wonder Woman episode when they do the movie. But that seems so far away, you know? But now we're like just a couple of days away from the Wonder Woman movie. This is like so exciting. I'm so thrilled to finally get a chance to see this movie.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited for it. I mean, it just everything about it looks like what I want to see from a DC movie. I'm very, very anxious to see it, you know, and get that experience, get in the theater and get to see it finally.
Yeah, I'm very heartened by what I've seen, and it looks cool, and I'm glad that some of the early reviews from some people are in, and they've been very positive. So yeah, so this is our big Wonder Woman episode. Wonder Woman was a big star from Power Records, of course, because she had a TV show, so that was a big thing. They didn't do as many Wonder Woman stories as they did Superman and Batman, of course, but they repurposed her stories a lot. But we'll get to all that later on. But before we even get even to all that, we have to thank our sponsor, which is InStockTrades.com. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I have the Coloring Wonder Woman book. It's one of those adult coloring books. And as our buddy Ryan talked about on a recent podcast, those things are really sharp. They got lots of great artwork through the decades of DC Comics. This one in particular, it has artwork from George Perez, Brian Bolland, Jim Lee, Amanda Connor, Ross Andrew, H.G. Peter, Cliff Chang, Adam Hughes. You know, it's got covers the entire history of Wonder Woman, covers, pinups. It looks great. The covers by Emanuela Lupacino. I hope I didn't just destroy that name. But it looks fantastic. The retail price was $15.99. In stock trades price is $9.27. You save 42%.
Very cool. I've never seen that book. That's interesting. That's an interesting collection of artists to try and draw. Like, hey, H.G. Peter, he put a lot of stuff into those drawings.
Yeah.
It's really complicated.
All those noodly lines he put in everywhere. Yeah.
Oof, that's you've set quite a test for yourself. So very cool. My pick is Wonder Woman 77, trade paperback volume 1. This is from Mark Andreyko, Drew Johnson, and various. Travel back to the sizzling 1970s as the undercover Amazon princess joins forces with Special Agent Steve Trevor to defend America against Cold War-era criminals. A search for an escaped Soviet scientist brings Wonder Woman to the hottest disco of the day, Studio 52, where a live stage act might prove more of a threat to Wonder Woman than the Russian roller derby girls out to bring the scientist home. This new title collects Wonder Woman 77 special numbers 1 and 2. It's 160 pages. The cover artist is Nicola Scott. Normal price, $16.99. In stock trades price, $9.85. That's 42% off. And for those of you that aren't quite into like the whole digital thing, this is kind of a neat way to have these all together. I've yet to actually pick up this book in that form, so I kind of want to take a look at it all collected like this, because I really enjoy Batman 66. And so I love the idea of Wonder Woman 77. I've said before there should be, you know, Superman 53 or whatever. They should do as many different versions as possible. So you can pick up either one or both, ideally, of these books. You can find these and other deals on InStockTrades.com right now. So for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com. And we thank them for their support. All right, Chris, we are here to talk about three Wonder Woman stories in question. They are The Secret of the Magic Tiara, Wonder Woman versus the War God, and the Amazons from Space. So, of course, like as we usually do, we're going to discuss these at length. But let's get right to the first one. So let's start with The Secret of the Magic Tiara.
Mm-hmm.
the bracelets that deflect bullets, Wonder Woman? Those right there on your wrists?
Oh, Mitch, you're such a groupie. Wonder Woman will be embarrassed.
That's all right, Sandra, Mitch. I haven't been embarrassed since I was small and I accidentally knocked the scepter out of my mother, the Queen's, hand while I was learning to throw the lasso.
We join Wonder Woman, the Amazon princess, as she walks along the beach with her friend Sandra and Sandra's boyfriend, Mitch.
The lasso. The magic lasso. I know all about that Amazon lasso stuff.
Oh, Mitch, you were never so impressed with me.
No, really. That lasso can make anyone tell the truth or do whatever you say when you put it around somebody. Right, Wonder Woman?
That's what my golden lasso does, all right.
Show me, would you? Try it out on me.
Oh, Mitch.
That's all right, Sandra. Watch out now. You're hooked, Mitch. Tell me, what's your birthday?
February the 30th?
What? How can that be? There is no February 30th.
Mitch, no one's ever been able to resist the lasso's compulsion. How did you?
Maybe the metal plate on my scalp has something to do with it.
A metal plate? You mean you had an accident that made it necessary to rebuild your skull? What part of your skull?
Right here. Feel it?
Yes, that would explain it. It's right over the portion of the frontal lobe of your cerebrum, which the lasso usually controls. That's quite remarkable. You told me a secret of yours, Mitch. I owe you a secret of mine.
Secret? What kind of secret?
Well, do you see this golden tiara of mine? That's magical, too.
I know it's the hardest substance on Earth, but how is it magical?
It's so closely linked to my being that whoever possesses it can control me as surely as I control people with my lasso.
No kidding. Hey, even I didn't know...
Help! Help!
Who's calling for help? Those people on the beach over there.
With the swiftness of Mercury, the amazing Amazon reaches the small group of distressed people as her two young friends follow behind.
Wonder Woman, my little boy is out in that water, and I can't see him. We all ran out when I thought I saw a shark fin and...
Great Athena! Calm down and wait here.
With the skill and speed of a mermaid, Wonder Woman enters the realm of Neptune to search for the boy. As on the shore, Sandra and Mitch reach the sea. She went in after my son. She hasn't surfaced for a good 10 seconds now. I wonder if she's...
Will you look at that? There's some fight going on out there. A shark!
A shark? Where? Oh, that's the biggest shark I've ever... It's flying through the air. Oh, she's thrown it out to sea. Miles out.
What a woman. Look! She's carrying something back to shore.
Bobby, she's... My Bobby, oh, thank God.
Hooray for Wonder Woman! Yay! Yay!
What's that? Floating in it that way?
What? Oh, that yellow thing. It's, oh my gosh, Wonder Woman's tiara must have fallen off.
Here, I'll give it back to her.
Give it back nothing? This is the chance of a lifetime.
Mitch, you wouldn't.
Wanna bet? Wonder Woman. Fine job of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation you gave that kid.
Yes, Mitch, I... My tiara, you've...
Now, how about a little resuscitation of my wallet, hey? There's small amounts of gold dissolved in all seawater. How about extracting, say, an ounce for me?
Mitch, you wouldn't!
I will obey, Master, of course.
As if possessed of a power greater than her own, the Amazon dives back into the sea. Churn up hundreds of gallons into a waterspout, which Wonder Woman whips against the shoreline over a deposit of granite rocks and lime shells. Even as the water falls toward the deposit, Wonder Woman races the wave to the ground and superheats the rock and lime by the friction of rubbing her hand against the surfaces. So that as the water touches the rock, it quickly evaporates away, leaving only the glistening gold dust.
Wow! Now that's what I call a get-rich-quick scheme.
I'm ashamed of you, Mitch. You give that tiara back to Wonder Woman this minute or I'll...
You're what, chick? You can't do a thing, because next, I'm sending Wonder Woman to dig me up the biggest uncut diamond in the world.
We Amazons know the location of that gem. It's at the bottom of a certain quarry in Africa. It will take some time to get it for you.
I've got all the time in the world. I can use 40 wings.
But as Wonder Woman pilots her robot plane out to the heart of Africa, and Mitch falls asleep on the beach.
I don't know whatever could have gotten into Mitch, but I'll put an end to it by taking the tiara. That sound. Wonder Woman's been gone only about an hour. Could she be back already?
Sandra, what are you doing with my tiara?
I got it away from Mitch for you. See? He fell asleep and...
Give me that. Right away.
Sure, Wonder Woman. I got it for you. What are you doing? Throwing it back at Mitch?
Don't tell him you took it when he wakes up. That business about the holder of the tiara making me do whatever they want isn't true. I made it up.
Made it up? Why?
Because I'm madly in love with Mitch and I want to impress him.
You? You? Oh!
Mitch! Mitch, wake up! Look what I've got!
What? Wonder Woman! What a diamond! It's gotta be as big as a grapefruit! That ties it. Now I know I can trust you. Look, there's this secret cove I'd like you to meet me at in about an hour.
Anything you say, Master. Where is it?
But an hour later, someone else finds Mitch at the hideout in the secret cove before our heroine does.
Is that you, Mitch?
Sandy, I told you never to come here. If they find out I told you about this place, you wouldn't be...
I had to tell you something about Wonder Woman. The tiara trick isn't real. She just told you that to me.
She what? Well, I'll have the last laugh on her. You get out of here, Sandy. Scram!
I didn't even finish the story, and he slammed the wooden gate on me. I don't know what's with him lately. Uh-oh. That's Wonder Woman coming. I better be out of sight.
Mitch, where are you, Master?
The other side of the gate, Wonder Woman!
Mitch, who are these three men in these cages here? And these other two guarding them?
My friends are guarding those three scientists who have been missing for a week or so. The ones working on the secret rocket fuel formula. And you are handcuffed. I won't be needing this tiara anymore. I'll just heave it out into the water.
You tricked me. You knew I was on to you. How?
That I did, and never mind how. But I'm also up on my Amazon lore, and I know that if you're shackled by a man the way you are now, you're helpless.
I can't lift a finger against you, or your henchmen, or whoever they are.
But we can lift your magic lasso. Take it, Bart.
Give me that. Here it is, Mitch.
Thanks. Now I suppose you've guessed why I want this.
To get the formula out of those three scientists. The magic lasso is lots more dependable than torture, is that it?
You catch on fast, lady. Listen, if you don't mind, I'll leave you here by the cove entrance while the rest of us go inside and take notes. High tide is coming in, and people who get caught short have a habit of drowning when the waves get up here. Wouldn't want that to happen to our three geniuses, would you?
You're all heart, Mitch.
Psst. What? What was that? Psst. Wonder Woman, it's me, Sandra. Is it all clear?
Sandra, you'd better get out of here before you drown. The tide will soon cover these rocks.
Not until I give you this. I swam out and retrieved it when Mitch threw it away.
My tiara. Thank Hera.
It's the hardest substance known. I remembered that. It'll cut through those handcuffs and free you.
And meanwhile, several hundred feet inside the hideout.
3 measures of bauxite quartz dissolved in a refined muriatic solution.
Go on, Professor. The rest of the formula. We've got all the time in the world now.
You'll have even more time than you think where you're going.
Amazon, empty your guns into her. She's moving her arms as fast as the bullets themselves, so they ricochet off the bracelets. Let's get out of here.
I don't know where on earth you think you're running, Mitch. Because the tide you thought would drown me has come in and blocked your only exit. And that takes care of you and your cronies. Now to free your prisoners.
thanks to you, Wonder Woman.
As the tide goes out, Mitch and his henchmen are delivered to the authorities, and the dust of this adventure settles, and the Amazon princess again finds herself walking along the beach with a young friend.
So I had to tell you I was trying to steal Mitch away from you, Sandra, to protect you. You see, I had been investigating the spy ring who had kidnapped the scientists, and I already knew about Mitch.
I'm sorry, too, Wonder Woman. By telling him you were tricking him, I almost blew it for the scientists and you as well.
Men have a habit of doing funny things to the minds of women as women do to men. We can only hope to grow wiser from each experience and try never to stop growing. Go in peace, my sister.
And that was The Secret of the Magic Tiara. This is this is kind of a weird one. I think we say that every time we do a Power Records episode, but this is a strange one. Chris, what did you think of this?
Well, I thought it was it's fun. It's interesting because we get into some Wonder Woman lore, and there was, you know, as we were going along and she was explaining about her tiara, I'm like, wait a minute, her tiara doesn't do that. You can't, you know, right, I'm like, right. What? They make this up, and then no, it's part of the plot. And then they actually do bring in the bit, you know, where if Wonder Woman's, she's shackled by a man, she's powerless, which, you know.
I was never a big fan of that detail.
No, I mean, I know Marston was a feminist in his own way, in his own time, but it, and we all know that he did enjoy the bondage in the Wonder Woman comics, so.
Lot of things in that whole area, as we know.
Yeah, enjoyed a lot of things that were a little taboo at the time, like, you know, two wives and things like that.
He had a good game.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Somebody's got to make a movie about that guy. I think I heard somebody was making a movie about that guy. It's interesting, you know. I mean, it's the 70s, and Power Records works in a Jaws thing, you know.
Yes, so. Right. Right. I was going to mention that they did release this particular adventure on a single, and on the sleeve, it's Wonder Woman and a shark. And so it's like, you know, that's such a tiny element to this story, but of course they focused on that because it's like, oh, it's Jaws. It's Wonder Woman versus Jaws. You kids will like that. So it's like, okay, yeah, all right, Power Records, calm down a little.
We covered the Jaws of the Shark album, right? So
yeah, we did.
We know how, you know, Power Records was, you know, they were above, well, we saw where they mixed Conan with Star Trek. We covered that.
Yep.
They're not above, you know, Batman and Gorilla City is basically Batman on the Planet of the Apes.
Right.
They're not above mixing and matching things that, you know, give them the right to basically print money, you know. Yeah. So
what are the kids like? Do that.
Right.
I do have a couple of questions about the story. Like, why can't anybody pronounce the word lasso?
Lasso.
Why is everybody saying lasso? I don't understand. It's not a hard word to figure out. It's very strange to me. And okay, they set up early that like Wonder Woman is friends with this couple, and it's pretty clear early on that Mitch is a creep.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Wonder Woman would be friends with them. She can't figure out that this guy's a total creep. You know, like, it seems like really early on. And maybe it's the way it's drawn, because this was also done as a book and record adventure as well. And the art is by the late, great Rich Buckler, and we'll get to that in a moment. But, like, just the way Rich Buckler draws Mitch with his little goatee, like, to me, he kind of looks like a mid-70s pornographer. So it's like, I'm just not buying that Wonder Woman would be able to see through that this guy is just up to no good.
Right, and I hate to say it, he kind of looks like mid-70s pictures of Neil Adams.
Commentary? We'll never know.
I don't know. I'm sure this was from the Continuity Studios. That's where this,
right,
you know,
right,
the artwork was farmed out to him. So, did Wonder Woman, was she already friends with Sandra? And she, you know, found out that Mitch was involved with, you know, kidnapping these scientists? Or, you know, did she just befriend Sandra to get to Mitch? Or did Mitch, like, did he, like, use Sandra to get to Wonder Woman? It just starts with them on the, why are these people on the beach together? You know, it's
right. Like, yeah, they're all just out for a stroll. Yeah,
they're out for a stroll on the beach. Wonder Woman's, of course, as Wonder Woman. She's not Diana Prince in this story at all, which we'll get some of that later. But I mean, she, you know, so it is. I mean, we're in media res as we come in here, you know, and it, we never do get those answers. But, you know, basically, Wonder Woman was willing. She knew that Mitch was up to no good, but she was willing to, you know, put her friend in danger while she was dating this, you know, evil spy douchebag, I guess.
Right,
so. Right.
Right, and then she does the whole thing about, I'm in love with Mitch. Like, she's willing to, you know, she doesn't clue her friend in on the,
right,
on the bigger scam, sort of. There's that whole angle. Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions in this one about Wonder Woman's relationships with these people, but, you know.
Re-listening to this for a brief second when she said that, I'm like, oh, God, who wrote this? Bob Haney?
Yeah.
This is that Brave and the Bold story where Wonder Woman's all of a sudden in love with Batman and fighting Batgirl, you know, for his affections. You know, it's like, what?
All of a sudden, like, Wonder Woman has a son that we've never heard about and then we'll never be referred to again because Bob Haney needed. Yeah, no, but I mean, I do like this story. You're right. It is very steeped in the lore. And I, you know, the Wonder Woman lore has never been totally coherent from version to version. So yeah, the tiara thing I don't like, and the manic, the you know, if I'm shackled by a man, I don't have any powers. That part I don't like either. But I also like that, you know, Wonder Woman is kind of doing like a Batman thing where she's being strategic. Mm-hmm. You know, I like all that stuff. I think that's fun. And I mean, in terms of, I think my favorite part of it really is in this particular case the book part of the Book and Record set. As we said, this was drawn by Rich Buckler, and I think this is the first show that any of us have done on the network where we're getting to talk about the fact that Rich Buckler just passed away like a week or so ago. I mean, he was a great artist. He was a great comic book artist, great superhero artist in particular. You know, really perfect style for superhero work. Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
I never did get to meet him, no. I did not.
I got to meet him at a couple Comic-Cons, and he did an Aquaman sketch for me, and he signed my copy of Justice League of America number 161 because he did the cover for that. And I always really liked him. He's one of the, you know, he drew the that two-part Starro story in JLA 189 and 190, and he does some amazing work here. The whole sequence with the shark, I think, is really well done. I mean, it's the you see that full-page shot of Wonder Woman diving at the shark, and then she lassos it with her lasso, and then I love, like, just kind of like, there's all these little bits and pieces of stuff to Power Records that they feel like they're meant for certainly older kids. There's the one page, right? It's the third page of the shark sequence, and you've got the top three panels, and everybody's on the beach reacting, and then the bottom panel, the shark comes out of the water, and Wonder Woman's got her arms around its nose.
Yeah,
there's a woman in panel three, looking out under the water, and she has got the tiniest bikini I've ever seen for what is ostensibly a children's record.
Yes.
I'm like, wow, that, like, they feel like them just sticking things in. And then on page four, I love Wonder Woman just throwing the shark miles away. It's such a great detail. And I'm just picturing, like, 20 miles away, Aquaman's like, hey, wait a minute, the shark just splashes by. Who did this to you? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. But, either that or it grabs a hold of Batman's leg while he's hanging from the back.
Exactly, yeah. Wonder Woman, stop throwing sharks around. But, I mean, the work is really well done. I mean, Rich Buckler, I think, was just a really great comic book artist. I mean, he worked on everybody. He drew every single character. And I think he does really great work here. And you know, I think it's a real, you know, he wasn't really active much anymore, as far as I know. I think he's doing a lot of commission work and stuff like that. But, you know, you look at something like this and you're just reminded that he was a really solid superhero artist. That the punch that Wonder Woman throws at the end to Mitch, like, you know that she's pulling her punch because otherwise his head would have flown off the way the shark flew, you know? Buckler really gives a great sense of power when she punches him.
Yeah, ka-chalk with the sound effect.
Ka-chalk,
You know, Rich Buckler, to me, you know, I kind of, in the comics anyway, I kind of missed the Neil Adams heyday. You know, by the time I started buying comics in the late 70s, Neil Adams was doing things like this.
Right.
But he wasn't really working on the comics so much. You know, on merchandise and things, you'd see his art. But so Rich Buckler, you know, when he worked on DC stuff, he tended to kind of work in kind of an Adams-type style. And, of course, he's working for continuity here. So But it's, you know, it's got that Adams influence. And when he was at Marvel, he had the Kirby influence. And, you know, I know people, you know, they, unfortunately, he's been accused of swiping from Kirby and Adams. And you can find that. But, but he delivered every time, whether he was swiping or not. You know, he could draw, you know, it was a means to an end because the dude cranked out a ton of work
at once.
I mean, he was working on everything at DC in the late 70s, early 80s, and I really enjoyed his World's Finest run. There's some great stuff when he was doing the Superman and Batman stories when it was in the dollar format. And, you know, he did those Justice League issues you're talking about, and he started All-Star Squadron. I mean, he was the original artist.
Right. One of the great – that first cover to number one. That's one of the great comic book covers of all time, I'd say.
Yes. And, I mean, he drew my beloved World's Finest number 271 with all the origins of the Superman-Batman team.
Great book. Great book.
Yeah, we've covered on Supermates. So, yeah, I mean, and he definitely – he could draw some beautiful women. Now, I don't know – this looks like it might have been inked by Dick Giordano. Because, you know, between the two of them, you're not going to find an unattractive woman in this story.
Nope.
And yes, some of the bikini shots, and then the six or seven lovingly rendered shots of Wonder Woman's behind that are in this story.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts out Wonder Woman's leaning over a rock. I mean, this is Shag's dream come true. She's leaning over a rock. There's her posterior in the air. There's this giant figure of Wonder Woman as she's approaching Sandra. On that one page, I mean, it's just this giant butt shot of Wonder Woman with one hip kind of flared out. You know, I mean, it's gorgeous. I mean, you know, it's a gorgeously drawn, and he's drawing gorgeous women. So
right, and he gets to draw other women on the beach. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a beach scene. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And he did, you know, I keep crediting him as a superhero artist, and of course that was his main thing, and he was really great at it. But like he also did other Power Record art, where he did some of like their literature adaptations.
Yeah.
So he did that stuff too. I mean, he had a facility of things, and on top of all the stuff you just mentioned, he had a long run on Fantastic Four as well. I mean, he really drew everybody, and like you said, yeah, he did get accused for swiping here and there, and he did. Absolutely swipe, but it, you know, it was done probably mostly for speed because he could draw, and he could draw very well, and that was just the way he chose to do. I mean, they said there were a lot of other artists that swiped over time, and to me it was never any sort of a big deal because he clearly knew how to do it, and I think this is a great example, and I'm glad that like we got to talk about this one in particular because I wanted to talk about him on some show for the network. And we were like, should I do like a special show? But then I realized, oh, he did this Power Records thing. It's the perfect time. So, yeah, this is – I actually – in this one, the story to me is like a B, but the artwork is like an A. You know, the book part is much better than the record part.
Right. It definitely is. I mean, I think, you know, if you don't have the comic with this one, and I actually do – well, it actually belongs to Cindy, but since it's part of her Wonder Woman collection. But, you know, if you've got the single of this one – you know, at least go to the Rob's Power Record blog and look at the artwork because it's gorgeous. It's one of the nicer looking Power Record comics, and that's saying something because there's some just flat out gorgeous comics in this line. I mean, most of it's by the Continuity Studios if it's not a Marvel reprint, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you know, oddly enough, I did a little research on Mike's Amazing World, the last. Art credit that Rich Buckler had for the big two was one of those DC retroactive specials, and it was Wonder Woman.
Oh, really? I didn't know
the 1980s issue. Yeah, when they did that in 2011, right before the New 52 started. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's cool. All right.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Yeah, in the show notes, I'm going to have a link to the Wonder Woman has her own tab on the Power Record site that I maintain. So we'll have that link to the show note where you can see all the different Wonder Woman-related Power Records. And this was a record, this particular story, Power Records got a lot of use out of this. They put it on a single, as I mentioned, the Shark-heavy single. They put it on as a book and record set. And they also put it on an LP with the two other Wonder Woman stories, which we'll get to, without a book component. And it was also part of the brief line of cassettes that Power Records did, which I didn't even know existed until I started doing the blog again. And there was this whole line of Power Records cassettes where they did die-cut, like, rack cards which is, you know, somewhere Brian Heiler's like, huh? But they feature like kind of really fairly involved die-cut header cards, and it's got Wonder Woman, and there's a cassette, and it features three adventures. And it's clearly not drawn by – it's probably drawn by somebody in-house because it's not terribly great-looking. But it's but the die cuts are, you know, pretty involved for Power Records, which was tended to be kind of a cheap outfit. So, I mean, obviously Wonder Woman stories kept selling well into the 80s because they bothered to repurpose them here.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because they kind of came full circle from whatever that other company was before Power Records that did all those.
Tilton, I think, is their name.
Yeah, die cut sleeves of Wonder Woman and Batman and Robin and all that stuff in the 60s during the Batmania and all the superhero craze in the 60s. So that's kind of weird how it kind of came full circle before that kind of just finally went out, you know, unfortunately.
I would love to find this cassette thing sometime on eBay. I never have. It's not like I can do anything with them, or it's not like I don't already know the stories, but I would just like to own one just for the collector's mentality. But I've never seen these anywhere. I've never seen them available on eBay. So,
you know, I brought up the Spider-Man and the Dragon Man.
Oh, right, Dragon right, right. Man
cassette. And that was, I think, the first time you'd ever thought about that there were Power Records cassettes.
I had no idea until you told me,
Yeah, that one actually came with a book. You know, it actually came with the book. And as far as I know, it wasn't die cut or anything in the package. But, you know, it's got the tape's got the little – it's got artwork on the little printed on the tape. So it's kind of neat. It's a whole nother little – another thing. There's, maybe we'll one day find out they made CDs and we just didn't know about it.
That'd be awesome. You never know with Power Records. It just keeps going on and on. So anyway, so that is the secret of the magic tiara. And now we're going to move on to our second story, which is Wonder Woman versus the War God.
On the right bank of the East River in the city of New York stands a magnificent complex of stone and glass buildings, the headquarters of the United Nations, where Diana Prince, secretly Wonder Woman, enters on the ground floor on her way to her job at the International Organization's Crisis Bureau.
Morning, Miss Prince. Looks like rain, no?
Hi, Tommy. I'll wait and see on that rain before I commit myself.
You've been hanging out with diplomats too long, Miss Prince. Hey, they never commit them. Uh-oh, trouble. Dead man coming in. Excuse me, General.
What is the meaning of this? Where did that buzzer come from?
That's the metal detector concealed in the doorway, sir. I'm afraid you're carrying some large metal object, and I'm going to have to search you if you don't...
I certainly do mind. I'm a Brigadier General in the United States Army with an important appointment to see the Secretary General. Now, if you will excuse me...
You'll remember that this building stands on international property, General, and that bulge under your coat, a pistol. I'll take that.
Get your hands off me. Of course it's a pistol. I'm a general, and generals carry pistols if they so desire.
Well, I don't know about that, General. I look,
this
I'm going to have to...
This scene is getting ugly. Probably my signal to duck into that empty corridor.
I absolutely must see the Secretary General or a terrible international incident will erupt.
Then you'll see him without that... Well, it looks as though you'll get your wish, sir. Here comes the Secretary General down the corridor now. You'll... General, put away that gun. Hey, you're no general. You're...
An assassin!
Wonder Woman, I expected you to show up, but you won't deflect my next shot. What is going on here?
Mr. Secretary General, find some cover. An assassination attempt. Great, Wonder Woman. You kicked the gun away. I got it now.
You've got my gun, but you won't get me.
You move fast for a stodgy old military man, but at the end of this corridor, there's just...
At the command of its Amazon mistress, an immeasurably powerful invisible plane zooms down from the sky, hovers briefly above her, dropping a rope ladder.
I've got the ladder. Now climb, robot plane. Follow the flying man.
And the supersonic chase is on through the skies over New York.
That so-called general is not even an ordinary assassin. He's already moving at nearly three times the speed of sound and accelerating. Faster, faster, robot plane. Must catch up to...
Welcome, my princess. How pleasant to see you again.
Goddess Jesus, preserve me, Mars, the god of war. Where in the cosmos am I?
The cosmos is quite correct, Princess Diana. For once, you were tricked into traveling at 8 times the speed of sound, chasing the general I created, making it possible to bring you crashing here through a dimensional window into another universe.
Another universe? Why? What's that you're doing with your sword? It's flaming.
I am sealing off the dimensional window, closing the hole in the fabric of the cosmos like a scar.
So I can't get back. But what does the high and mighty god of war want with a mere Amazon woman?
Not a mere Amazon princess. You underestimate yourself. You are the only thing at the United Nations capable of keeping my general and my other 3 agents who have infiltrated the Security Council from killing the chiefs of certain key delegations.
Infiltrated the Security Council? Merciful Minerva!
I will allow you to go home soon, Wonder Woman, to a world at war.
I'll reopen that dimensional window or... I tried to leap up at you with all my Amazon strength, but that sound in my head sent me flying in the other direction.
Try again, Princess.
I tried to whip my arms around to make an air current, throw you off balance and out of the way, but it only drove me down into the ground.
You are in another universe, Wonder Woman, where the dominating force is sound. The physical laws that give you your powers do not hold here.
Sound? Then I'll yell at the top of my lungs.
You can't even focus the energies of your own body. How can you hope to tumble the god of war against his will?
Hera, help me.
I'll try, Wonder Woman.
Who's that?
It's Hera, queen of the goddesses. You called, and I answer. Mars cannot hear me, only you.
Giving up, Wonder Woman? Save your strength for the Great War, a war that will feed my power and make Mars supreme among the gods.
There is a power I can give you that may defeat Mars.
What power?
The power to conjure images. If you throw symbols at him that anger him enough, he will bring his sword down on you in rage. Then if you can block the sword with your magic bracelets, that will harness enough power to rip open the dimensional window.
The Security Council session is beginning, Princess. Care to watch?
Power mad, despotic male, I say this to you.
Taking Hera's advice, Wonder Woman conjures up the universal symbol of peace.
What? A dove? You conjure a bird of peace to fly at me? Here is my answer.
Oh, a hawk to kill the dove. Then what is your answer to this?
One of us lives.
One of those peace-loving folk singers. Ugh. Let her contend with this.
Behind the dead, please. He saw his people engaging the strike.
Hitler, you play rough. Then take the sounds of Woodstock.
For the loser now, only later to win.
The Civil Rights March on Washington.
I have a dream.
The Sermon on the Mount.
Enough of you and your silly game. Now you will know. The power of war is greater than the power of peace, and I will prove it with a single swing of my sword.
As the god of war swings his mighty sword, Wonder Woman blocks the blow with her magic bracelets, harnessing enough power to slash open the dimensional window back into this universe, and in microseconds she is back in the United Nations.
Made it. But I must get to the Security Council chamber before it's too late. Oh, help me, Hera, help me!
Diana, this is Hera. You will be able to find the 4 assassins because they will be glowing with a glow only you can see. Be fleet of foot and strong of heart, Diana.
Oh, thank you, Queen of Goddesses, thank you.
Throwing open the door to the chamber, Wonder Woman enters, and instantly her keen eye catches sight of a figure of a man standing in the back of the hall.
And the chair recognizes the representative of the People's Republic.
You! Over there! The man with the broom!
With one mighty leap, Wonder Woman reaches the disguised assassin and grabs the broom out of his hand.
Wonder Woman, unhand that poor custodian!
He's no custodian, Mr. Chairman. Look here, this broom handle has a concealed dart gun. And there, look out! The fake general!
You'll never take me! The bullets! They're bouncing off your bracelets!
Like you're bouncing off the floor! You, up there in the press box, you're no reporter!
You won't get me!
Leaping up to the press section 40 feet over the meeting chamber, Wonder Woman seizes the phony reporter.
You can't hide now. You can't even run.
Oh, my neck! Let go of my neck!
Your weapons first. Where are your assassination weapons?
In my pants!
Just what I thought. A hidden hypodermic needle. Now for assassin number four. Where could... There! That cameraman!
Leaping down into the hall again, Wonder Woman confronts the last of the would-be assassins and seizes his camera.
This camera holds enough poisonous serum to drop every single delegate in this hall. Someone call UN security to pick up these four... Hey, where do they go?
They vanish. All four assassins just disappeared into thin air.
Impossible! Where could they have... Hera! Oh, Hera, help me!
Look up there! A woman, a beautiful woman, floating in the air over the chamber!
Women and men of the United Nations, my child Wonder Woman has done well. She has averted a horrible war on Earth, as we of Olympus have dealt with its cause on high, the evil god of war.
Then you have captured Mars, great Hera?
Yes, and forced him to recall his four agents. We have imprisoned the Lord of War in a netherworld of the cosmos, from which even he cannot escape. Your Earth is safe from his forces through your efforts, Diana, along with our own.
Thank you, Mother Hera.
Carry on, my children, and go in peace.
And that was Wonder Woman versus the War God. Now, Chris, am I crazy, or did Mars sound a lot like Superman?
Yeah, well, Wonder Woman sounds a lot like Catwoman from the Batman album, too. So
fair enough.
Yeah, well, we're gonna hear some other voices and sounds from one of my beloved Power Records here soon anyway. But yeah, there's definitely, you know, different repertoire companies working on these Power Records, and it seems like there's one in particular they keep coming back to, but they do good stuff, so you know.
Mm-hmm. This is just a fun story. I mean, like them set at the UN, and then, like, you know, this guy shows up and he's pretending to be a general, and then of course he's just Mars, the god of war, and you're like, okay, that's kind of a whole weird thing. I keep forgetting I haven't listened to this story that much compared to, you know, like Mark of the Man-Bat or Mark of the Man-Wolf, not Mark of the Man-Bat. I just combined those two stories. Robin meets Man-Bat, Mark of the Man-Wolf.
Right.
Conflated those two stories. But like, so every time I listen to this one, I completely forget that there's the whole bit where they compare like Earth's histories and you hear like a Joan Baez and Hitler in this one. Like, I forget.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they didn't get the rights to use Joan Baez. And you know, and then the Woodstock, whoever that was that was playing at Woodstock, it was just a little snippet. Did you know who it was?
No, I didn't. I didn't either.
But and of course, here's Power Records. You know, it's like Suicidal Clowns and now Hitler.
Yeah.
You know, here's Hitler on your Power Records.
I love Wonder Woman's response. Hitler, you play rough.
Yeah,
Wonder Woman. Yeah. I have to admit, I really don't know if Wonder Woman using Woodstock is like a great example of like one of the great achievements of man. Like, I think if you're arguing with somebody that, like, you know, people are good or people are bad, and the person you're arguing with is, well, people are bad, here's my proof, Hitler, I think you need to come up with a better example than people are good than Woodstock. But okay, that's a you know, this was also written by guys in the late 70s who were probably at Woodstock. They're probably like, yes, of that age. So I'm sure that the Woodstock thing loomed very large in the pot-addled minds of the Power Records writer. So I'll give him a mulligan on this one.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the general busting through the wall and flying away and stuff. Yeah, this does seem kind of, you know, little high-ish dream going on there or something. Yeah, I mean, there's some out there moments. But, you know, Wonder Woman did work in the UN Crisis Bureau in the comics at the time. So this is very much of the time in the Bronze Age comics. So, yeah, in the TV show, I mean, when they moved Wonder Woman to the modern era, she did work for a government agency. What was that, IDAC or whatever it was called? I can never remember that. Yeah, you know, but so it's kind of a similar enough situation, right? But it definitely is set in the comic setting here, and we don't get the spin change like Linda Carter would do when she, you know, they would have milked that, I'm sure, if they wanted to do that, you know, wanted to go the TV route. But yeah, I mean, and you know, I always forget that Mars was the guy before Ares, because ever since George Perez, Ares has been the, you know, it's been the Greek version, right, of the god of war that we've gotten. So but you know, all those years before, it was Mars. And I'm not 100% sure that, I'm not one of, no spoiler warning, but there might be some elements of this story that are going to be similar to what we see in the Wonder Woman movie.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
How cool would that be? All right.
The only thing I really have a problem with is the Hera hotline in this movie. I mean, this not movie, but this record. I mean, it's like, you know, Hera, oh, Hera. It's like, God, Wonder Woman, can you do something by yourself? Jeez, I was just putting tea on. Come on, I'm busy. I got stuff to do, you know?
She does commit a bit like Jor-El in Superman 2, where it's like, you know, I gave away all my powers. Can you fix it? You know, it's, yeah, a little like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she shows up and she calls her, and then she calls her again. And I kind of like to see Wonder Woman a little more self-reliant, which we got with the other story we did. And you know, this is probably the one that we're going to cover tonight, where she's, you know, definitely not, you know, solving the problem on her own. And I don't know how often Wonder Woman actually in the comics, I mean, she said great Hera a lot, but I don't know how many times she actually answered. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When she shows up at the very end, like the last couple panels, it is very, you know, it's like Ghost in the Machine kind of thing. You're like, wow, it's just, wow, Hera can just show up and do this stuff. Okay, that's great. And yeah, it does make Wonder Woman seem a little less self-reliant. The one other thing in terms of the audio, there's the one moment where we hear like the flying sound effect. Mm-hmm. And I can't hear that and not expect Superman to show up.
Right.
Like, I kept waiting for Superman to pop up in the story. I mean, he never, yeah, does. For some reason, they never did crossovers in the Power Records for some weird reason. But yeah, they never did that. But every time I hear, you know, I'm like, oh, Superman's about to show up and help Wonder Woman out. Like, oh no, that's not what happens. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, speaking of sound, there's a couple. This sound was in the Magic Tierra too. This Power Records is usually spot on with their sound effects. But the sound of bullets bouncing off Wonder Woman's bracelet sounds like somebody breaking, like, ceramic teapots or something. I just – it's not the – I mean, what happened to the old, you know, like the George Reeves Superman ricochet sound, you know? I mean, that's perfect. Just use that. I mean, that's what they used on the Wonder Woman TV show, you know?
Yeah.
Just, you know, and Wonder Woman, when she screams at the top of her lungs – she's no Black Canary. I'm sorry. That was not a good sound effect. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, again, they can't all be winners all the time.
Right.
In terms of the artwork for this story, now I have not. I actually did some research, and I tried to find who drew this thing, because the style is not immediately identifiable. Comics.org says it's Al Milgrom and Dick Giordano, and there are some panels that I think I can kind of see Al Milgrom a little. So
I wondered if it's not Larry Hama and Dick Giordano, because he did that Spider-Man and the Dragon Man.
That's right, he did, yeah.
And this looks kind of like that. And, you know, Larry Hama's mostly known for, well, writing G.I. Joe, honestly. So, you know, his artwork's not as well known as his writing, obviously. And I don't know if we're, you know, most people are all that familiar with it. But I guess it could be Milgram, but I guess I've gotten so used to Milgram as he evolved over at Marvel with that really thick, brushy ink line he had. Mm-hmm. But if somebody else is inking him, then it might be him. I guess it does kind of look a little bit like some of the covers he did for DC in, like, his early Firestorm stuff, maybe a little.
Yeah. If somebody told me it's not Al Milgram, I would say, okay, buy it. But if we found out that it was, I would buy that, too. Giordano was such a distinctive inker that I could see him kind of converting either Larry Hama or Al Milgram to making it look more like his stuff. It wouldn't surprise me.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's really well done. I mean, Wonder Woman is, you know, it's not the Rich Buckler look, but she's, you know, she's attractive. And Mars looks, you know, pretty intimidating. And it's solid. I mean, it's solid, you know, work from Power Records. Of course it is. But yeah, there's definitely a big Giordano stamp all over this thing. I mean, you could almost convince me he did it by himself in some of the pages, and he may have, because it could have just been a continuity jam piece. You never know. Many hands, you know. Mm-hmm. Crusty bunkers.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot to fit in here. I mean, there are some pages with like 12 panels, so they had to fit a lot of story into a relatively short space. So yeah, it's nice looking. It's generally pretty nice. Again, like you just said, not as distinctive, but I think overall it's pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, working, I wonder how these guys, you know, it's so odd, because they had, you know, basically this one was like a album sized, and the book is large. It's, you know, the pages are, you know, wider than your standard comic page, but they crammed more. It's not like they treated it like a tabloid comic or a Treasury edition. It's like, you know, it's just different. It's almost like it's like a whole, like, page of a, like a colored newspaper strip or something. It's kind of unlike any other comic format in a way.
I mean, they're perfect squares, these pages, which is not something where comic artists are used to drawing in. So yeah, the whole thing is a very, very unique format. Again, it's a shame that, as far as I know, these things have never been reprinted anywhere, you know?
Like, some of the Neil Adams stuff was reprinted in the Batman illustrated by Neil Adams, like Robin Meets Man-Bat, and I think the Joker stacked cards was. But yeah, it's like, why aren't these, you know, I mean, they could make just a trade paperback of these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, get on it, DC. Come on.
Yeah, come on. What are you doing? So, all right, well, I think that's going to do it for the War God. So now we're going to move on to our third and final story, which also appeared on this sort of tabloidy-sized record, which Chris just mentioned. And that story is Amazons from Space.
On the sixth floor of the United Nations Secretariat building in New York are probably the busiest people in the entire matchbox-shaped structure, the reporters who tell the world of the international organization's affairs.
Yeah, I don't know, Fred. There's something going on upstairs. Those troubleshooter types don't want to tell us about it.
I know. That astronomer who discovered the spectacular meteor shower headed past Earth had an appointment with Morgan Tracy and Diana Prince of the Crisis Bureau this morning. Since then, there hasn't been a public word from any government official anywhere. That's all I know.
That's all anybody knows. It's pretty spooky, if you ask me.
But two people who do know are Morgan Tracy of the Crisis Bureau and Diana Prince, alias Wonder Woman.
There's no indication at all that it's an invasion. These men running the world's governments are afraid of anything unknown. They'd be afraid of their shadows if they weren't attached to them.
And this is no laughing matter, Diana. What we thought were meteors are actually spaceships on a direct course for Washington, D.C. All they've got to do is say boo, and the balance of peace around the world could topple for fear of them.
Fear, that's the word. Not a love of peace, not need for security. It's blind fear that rules these.
Hello, Tracy here. He has. Then the others will follow immediately. Thanks.
Well, what is it?
It's out of our hands now. The ships have entered the atmosphere, and the President of the United States has authorized an anti-missile barrage to stop them. The Soviet Union and other nuclear powers will probably back up the American defense with their own support. Diana?
It might be out of your hands, Morgan, but that makes it the world's problem.
Hey! And within minutes, leaping off the roof of the United Nations building to land on the invisible wing of the robot plane is the red and gold form of Wonder Woman. As the magnificent solar-powered vehicle begins a dizzying climb into the stratosphere, racing the armed might of the world's greatest nations to disaster.
There's a fleet of about six ships heading down and a whole swarm of missiles on the way up. The first one, the lasso, I can divert it. Yes, lasso will stretch infinitely. Cover up that other bomb with gold and indestructible cocoon so it can blow harmlessly. Two of them now, one at each end of the lasso. Spin them round and round. Hera, help me fling these flying death heads clear.
One after the other, Wonder Woman deflects and defuses and contains the explosions of the destruction-carrying tubes that soar up at the approaching ships until not one weapon is left. And on the lawn surrounding the Washington Monument in the capital city of the United States, the robot plane accompanies six magnificent ships to a soft landing. It is not long before a crowd of people gravitate to the lawn as Wonder Woman looks on. As if at a signal, when members of the news media arrive, six entry hatches to six spacecraft open. And
They're all women! And they've got to be at least 7 feet tall!
7 feet tall and gorgeous!
Women and men of Earth, we come in peace. We call ourselves the Psi Women, and we reign supreme on the world of Regulus IV.
The news hits the world like a wave of rolling thunder. And within a week...
This is Patsy Keene for WRRB-TV. Thousands of women cheered Lyra, leader of the Psy Women, today when she spoke at Madison Square Garden. Lyra espoused the Psy Women's philosophy of the superiority of women to men in all ways, saying that if women ruled Earth, then their ships would never have been attacked out of mindless fear. They say that on their planet, men are slaves who walk on all fours, something hardly likely to happen here on Earth.
Sometime later in the skies above the city, Wonder Woman seeks out the leader of the Psy Women.
Psy Women's command ship directly ahead. Robot plane slow to rendezvous with ship and hover.
And Wonder Woman's plane soon makes contact with the alien craft.
Lyra! Lyra! Come out of the ship immediately. This is Wonder Woman and this is an order.
Come aboard, sister. Why do I detect anger in your voice?
You don't know? Don't you monitor Earth television? Haven't you seen what's been happening in the weeks your ships have been hovering over our world? Do you know what's happened to our men?
Your men have simply begun to take their proper place in your society. It is a gift from the enlightened civilization of Regulus IV.
A gift? Turn on that television monitor and look at this gift.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Look at that, Lyra. The President down on his knees as he crawls to the podium behind his wife. Now look, he's sitting up on his hind legs as his wife addresses the press.
Ladies of the press, because of the effects the bizarre events of these past weeks have had on our economy, the President and I have decided...
I thought you were an Amazon, Wonder Woman, not a slave. I see you will no longer be welcome in our ships. You are dismissed.
Get that hand off me, or I'll take it home as a souvenir.
Don't do anything. Oh! Not even the women of my own world are permitted to lay a hand on Lyra. You will have to be corrected. Have you killed Wonder Woman? It is only your ignorance that keeps me from doing so.
I'll leave now, but if you continue to spread this noxious philosophy of yours, you can swear by Hera, I shall be back. You there in my plane, who are you? For Athena's sake, get up off your knees.
I can't get off my knees, Wonder Woman. This isn't natural, you see. It's a disease. I'm a Psi-Man from Regulus IV. Please take me away from here. If they know I even talk to you, they'll certainly torture me.
I didn't know the Cywomen brought any of their men along, and I suspected this all fours business was some kind of disease of theirs. What's the story?
The story is a terrible one of sickness and pestilence. A horrible affliction that affects only men. An affliction the women of my world have brought to yours.
Don't be afraid. Tell me.
Generations ago, men were dominant on my world. Even more so than on Earth. Then the germ hit. Within weeks, all men were dropped to the posture of dogs. It fell to the women until a cure was found to take over the dominant role.
And there is a cure. What is it?
That's what is so horrible. When Regulus IV scientists found a cure, a vote was taken among the women and they decided to suppress it. We understand now that the women were downtrodden so long that they could not bring themselves to give up the world's rule. They decided to roam the galaxy for human-populated planets, bringing the disease germ with them. Earth is their first target, and the dozens of men who came along with them are kept hidden, serving only as servants like me.
Well, there's just a chance we can put an end to this injustice once and for all.
What are you doing? Landing on the water? The island is over there.
Paradise Island, where no man can set foot. But if you will cooperate, Amazon scientists will be able to use this plane as a floating medical laboratory while they analyze your blood and try to find a cure for the disease.
A cure? I would do anything for a cure.
Afternoon wears on to night, and night gives way to the rays of morning light as the finest medical minds the Amazon civilization has produced shuttle back and forth to the robot plane floating off the coast of Paradise Island until...
Well, what have you got, Penelope?
With Minerva's help, I think I've found a serum that should reverse the effects of the disease, but it would be a great risk without further testing.
With further testing, time would pass. I would be found and punished for leaving. Please, let me be the test case.
And just hours later, the time comes for Lyra and her sisters from Regulus IV to say farewell to the planet Earth from the lawn in front of the Washington Monument where they first appeared.
New rulers of the planet, we have left you our enlightened ways and a chance to remake your society according to a better order. We of Regulus IV bid you...
That noise? What is that disorder inside my ship?
We're free!
The Cymen, walking on 2 feet, rebelling. Stop them, sisters!
Peace. Let there be peace here.
Wonder Woman, our savior.
I might have known you would somehow be responsible for this travesty, renegade female.
Lyra, Cywomen, Cymen, people of Earth. My Amazon sisters found a cure for the disease that makes men submissive to women. Because for women to come into their own that way would defeat the very meaning of sisterhood.
Boo!
Oh, forget it!
No!
We want it! We want that!
Listen to me. Let me speak. I saturated the atmosphere of the Earth with the disease cure in gaseous form using my robot plane. Because it is not dominance, one group over the other group, for which both women and men must strive, it doesn't matter which of us is toughest, we must all be given a chance to be equals.
Wonder Woman is right. We have a chance when we return to Regulus IV to go back as equals for the first time in our history. Men and women of all worlds are different, and for that reason, need each other desperately. Let us take this chance, and surely we will profit from it.
That goes here on Earth, too. Hooray for Wonder Woman!
Great Hera, make this dream come true.
And that was Amazons from Space. I did it with that one because Chris just took me to task for not saying it like the Muppets for the, who did it in the, before we went to the adventure. I don't know why I couldn't think of that word. Anyway, this is the Amazons from Space. Like I said, it's the second story in this sort of book square record that we were talking about. This one, okay. I mean, there's a lot to say about it. The whole idea of women taking over the universe and coming over and enslaving men and enslaving the president. I don't know about you. That's something I'd like to see right now, but that's a whole other thing. Who wouldn't? I do want to ask you, why does that one Amazon have a southern accent? Can you explain that to me, Chris? Is there a southern part of Paradise Island?
There's a southern part of everywhere. I think the Leylands have said that, right? There's a south everywhere, right? So, maybe it's because she's kind of like the doctor. Maybe she's the Dr. McCoy of Paradise Island. I don't know. Well, I'm just an old country doctor, Wonder Woman. I don't know about making men sit around like dogs. Yeah, I was going to ask you, I'm like, why is Penelope sound like a, Southern Belle, like Scarlett O'Hara is on Paradise Island? You
know? They love Smokey and the Bandit in that part of Paradise
Who Island. Doesn't? It's 1977, right?
Very popular, very, very big, yeah. No, I like this story a lot. It's got much more of a subtext to it than you would expect from a children's record. Because it's flat out addressing the whole idea of women's rights and women being treated equally. And, you got the whole angle of like where women are like, well, we've managed to subjugate the men. And Wonder Woman's like, well, no, that's not equality. If one side is subjugating the other side, you have to work together. That's a pretty heady theme to work into a kid's record.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I'm thinking all the little girls that maybe listen to this, and when they heard the whole notion of like with the women subjugating the men, how many little girls just nodded their head like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Made their little brothers get down on all fours.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and this seems like it could be a Marston plot from the Golden Age.
Yes.
Move it up to the 70s, but yeah, I mean, you could see this working in. I imagine Steve Trevor would be on his knees and, Wonder would be like, get up, Steve, But yeah, it's both of these stories on this album are actually pretty creative. I'll give them that. I mean, it's a pretty unique story. I mean, it really is. I mean, this one does feel like it's got that message of feminism. But, it kind of beats you over the head with it. But it's aimed at little kids. So. Even though the artwork in this, some of it, wow.
Yowza.
We think this is by Mike Nasser and possibly, or Mike Netzer, Mike Nasser, Netzer, he's gone by both names, and possibly Dick Giordano. If you look online, you'll find most people credit him. And this looks like some of the Black Canary stuff he was doing, like over in World's Finest for DC at the time. So, Lyra, the space Amazon. Whoa, when she walks in, wow.
Yeah, that's again children's record.
Yeah. And I think Shag, one of his relatives, is actually on this album. 7 feet tall and gorgeous. She's hot, So.
Yeah, it's a good, it's a nice looking record. I mean, the artwork is really, it does look very much like Mike Nasser to me. I'd be pretty shocked if it's not, because it's the spitting image for his work. And I know that he worked for Continuity Studios. He was big at DC at this time, so I'm pretty sure that this is his work. And like I said, it's a really unusual story. It really is. It's one of the things that reminded me when they meet the president, and. This is something I've mentioned on Fire and Water, and this is this is one of those moments where I'm like all both sides and stuff. But I am against superheroes meeting actual presidents. To me, they need to meet fake presidents, because
right.
I just think it's just too jarring to have. As I mentioned in the episode that we did, where like Aquaman is like hammering out an Atlantean peace treaty with Obama. Like, that's just weird. And, you know, not to like take the show in a direction we don't want it to go in, but it's like, there is no way that Wonder Woman is standing in the same room as Donald Trump.
Right.
That ain't happening. Okay. she's got a temper. He, you know, he starts doing his shtick. She's knocking his block off. So that's the end of that. So there should never be real presidents in a comic. They should always be President Smith, President, you know, whatever. So that part I was a little weirded out about. Because, I mean, when they literally have the president drop to his knees in this one, this is very, very strange.
Well, he doesn't look like Jimmy Carter. So, no, you know, it would be Jimmy Carter right now. So, yeah, it doesn't look like Carter. He's just a nondescript gray-haired
man. But ironically, in the Power Records Hollow Man record, he meets Jimmy Carter.
Exactly, yes.
Jimmy Carter. So at least he's not doing it here. I love the detail where they said that the invisible plane is solar-powered. I didn't know that. I was like, was that a thing? I thought that was a nice little detail.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. It's like, you know, what I think is really funny is that Wonder Woman goes out of the rocket and the Psi-Man is you know, down on all fours, of course. He can't help it. On the wing of her plane. How did he find it?
That's a good question.
It's invisible.
Maybe he bumped into it at some point. I don't know.
Maybe.
He did like Jillian did, where she finds the Klingon bird of prey in the park, you know, where she just smashed into it. Something like that.
Yeah, there you go.
I love that the record opens with that same kind of ticky-tacky sound effect that you heard at the Daily Planet from the Superman records. Like, it's so funny. I'm so familiar with these Power records that, like, a lot of the sound effects, they're like song cues, you know? Like, I'm just so familiar with them that I can recognize them instantly. And the minute I hear that ticka 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 ticka, you know, I'm like, oh, that's you know, Clark and Lois and Jimmy are hard at work at the next big scoop. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not where we are. We're here. We're somewhere else.
Well, the Psi-Man, when he does this big exposition of what happened on their planet, the music in the background is the exact same music that was used in the exposition in Robin Meets Man-Bat.
Oh, is it really? Oh, that's funny.
And the actor is definitely the same guy that played Kirk Langstrom. So
okay.
It was like a double callback for me from my favorite Power Records. So
never throw anything away. That's the Power Records motto. Yeah, the artwork, we mentioned the artwork. It's really terrific. The shot of Wonder Woman, there's one shot of her, like just like almost she takes up like a third of the page where she's running towards the camera. And then in the background, you see her on the invisible jet. Like that was such an iconic shot. They use it on the cover. Mm-hmm. Of the record. I mean, it's just it's a really classic Wonder Woman shot. So yeah, and as you mentioned, the Amazon book of wow, you know, that is right out of like 1966 Star Trek, Bill Tice costumes. It's pretty remarkable. And I love the portrait of Wonder Woman at the end where she's talking just by herself. Like that's like a really just nice headshot. And I like how she's bursting from the panels. It's very, very handsome.
It looks a little Linda Carter-y, that one does.
Yes, it does.
And And Nasser drew Linda Carter on the cover of one of the Amazing World of DC Comics. So, plugging Zoom show. it was a Wonder Woman issue. So, yeah, it makes me think of that. You know, it feels like it's the closest we get to her in these. So, it's nice. I mean, the page where Wonder Woman throws Lyra and Lyra's coming right at the camera and luckily her drapage is covering things up as she flies towards us.
Luckily.
Not really, but for the fact that, you know, so Power Records wouldn't, you know, get a bunch of angry moms on them, I guess.
Power Records wasn't shut down. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So they could continue for a few more years. Yeah. I thought the spaceship design was kind of neat. It was very alien. It looked different, you know, it was just really well done. The only thing that was kind of weird was when Wonder Woman was, like, lassoing the missiles. It looked like she had a hold of a disco ball or something. It just was kind of odd. You know? Other than that, it was, you know, really, really sharp. Storytelling was really neat in this one.
Of the three Wonder Woman stories they did, I think this one was my favorite just because it's the most unusual. It's just, as you said, it really does read like a William Moulton Marston story. And these three stories are the only Power Record stories that they did featuring Wonder Woman, because the other one, The Return of Brunhilde, that was appropriated from Tilton. That was already done on the 60s record. So these three are the sole Wonder Woman stories produced by Power Records, actually. And so, you know, I think they all approach the character in different ways. But I think this one is my favorite just because it's the most ambitious it's the most unusual, and it seems to key up with Wonder Woman's whole philosophy, you know, with the whole, you know, equality is not achieved when we are dominant, it's when everyone is equal. And that's, you know, to me, that's ultimately what Wonder Woman is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good yep. stuff. So before we move on, we are going to do listener feedback. I keep forgetting to do listener feedback. We're going to do it this time. But before we get to that, Chris, you wanted to mention something about the Magic Tiara record?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of odd. I know we were talking about this was done probably for Continuity Studios, who then, you know, they did it for Power Records. You know, I know at one time DC actually was considering farming out the creative on several other titles to Power Records in the 70s. Neil Adams has said this. I mean, not to Power Records, but to Continuity. I'm sorry. Farming it out, their creative, the stories, the art, everything to be packaged by Continuity. And you can see some artwork from the late 70s, Batman artwork by Neil Adams. I know comic book artists even had a cover that was one of these Neil Adams covers for that project that, you know, it didn't go through. I'm not sure that they shouldn't have done that, because they should have went ahead and did it, because this is some gorgeous stuff. And honestly, some of DC's artwork during this period, not all, but some, it was kind of a rough period for DC as far as at least art, maybe not story, but some of the artwork at DC in the mid to late 70s, before you got that influx of some of the Marvel people coming in like Perez and stuff, you know, unless, you know, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, was, you know, able to pencil a full issue that month. Sometimes it was a little weak, but kind of in that same vein, the Wonder Woman, the Magic Tiara comic record combo has this gorgeous cover by Rich Buckler of Wonder Woman coming down on her rope ladder from the invisible plane. It's got that magenta pink background that everything in the 70s had. It's really gorgeous. And oddly enough, Continuity apparently, or DC got the art somehow. That artwork is also on a plastic cup that Cindy has in her collection. Another strange factor in this is that they drew Steve Trevor into the artwork. He's at the controls of the invisible plane on the cup, but not on the comic. So I'll take a picture of it. Maybe we can throw it up in the episode, you know, gallery or something.
That's cool. But, yeah, no, I'll put it on the Power Records blog. That's neat. Okay. I like finding all those little side uses for that stuff. That's cool. That's funny that they made the effort to redraw part of it too.
Yeah. So I mean, had you heard about that Continuity could have been doing DC's work for him in the late 70s?
No, I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah, it's I think it's like the first issue of the first run of Comic Book Artists. If you can find that, it's got a Neil Adams Batman cover, and he's like running from some big sea monster looking thing. And I mean, it's apparently from that pitch that he made, that, you know, and they were considering, I guess, maybe Jeanette Kahn, maybe after the DC implosion, they were considering, you know, farming this stuff out to Power. It was around that time. So,
I must have read that. I have that book. I must have read it and just somehow forgot it. But that's interesting. I mean, that would have been, wow. Imagine where that would have gone if they had done that.
Yeah, based kind of like what Marvel did when they did Heroes Reborn, you know, where they farmed it out to Image. So, which didn't quite work out.
Yeah,
but
maybe that's not the best comparison to make in the world.
But I think, you know, based on what we've got from these Power Records, I think maybe they should have done it.
that's really interesting. That's cool. Yeah, no, I can't wait to put that up on the Power Record blog. That's really cool, because I love finding the extra uses for the Power Record material. So that's cool. Great. Oh, I love that. That's awesome. So, all right, well, let's move on to feedback. We have some listener feedback from the previous episode, which we did a little while ago, and that was the Conan the Barbarian episode. And so these are all comments from – we're just doing the comments we got on the website, which is, of course, Power Records. It's fireandwaterpodcast.com. So the first comment is from Ange, from the Comic Box Commentary blog, of course. And he says, Ange says, might be my favorite overall record because it sure does veer into some more mature themes. My guess is if I heard this as a kid, I would feel like I had sneaked into something more adult. In the first story, I thought for sure the woman would end up as a villain. Her calling to him reminded me of the scene in the first Conan movie. Do you want to warm yourself by my fire, barbarian? No such fireside chat in this record as we saw there. And yes, Chris, when I think of why young Ange struck out with women, it was probably because I thought you were a handsome wench, and from The Big Sleep, I have a decent bottle of rye in my pocket were good lines. They worked in movies / comics. I don't, you know, the idea that you would take something from a comic book and think that's going to be a good line on a woman, like right there, like just stop. No, don't do that. It's never going to work.
That's how I got Cindy. I don't know.
Well, you know, very rare. Very, women are very, very rare, as we know. So.
Our pal Ryan Daly, my co-host on Batman Nightcast, wrote in, "I think I smiled from ear to ear when this loaded to my phone the other morning. These four episodes were all terrific, worthy of stories like Tower of the Elephant that I read in the collection. But the side B stories in particular were outstanding. Great plot, great voice acting, great narration, and sound effects. This was easily my favorite episode of the show since you covered Tomb of Dracula and Spider-Man Meets the Man-Wolf. And before that, Man-Thing. I may prefer the genre Power Records more than the classic superhero episodes."
Yeah, I as we said on that show, I think the Conan record is probably the best thing Power Records ever did in terms of pure atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that one holds up, like, totally unironically. Like, it's as good as a Conan comic book.
Maybe it's because where some of the people that worked on it, you know, they may have thought when they did the superhero stuff, they were toiling in kiddie fare. And when they did something like Conan, it's, you know, this is adult. I don't have to feel ashamed about this.
Yeah, maybe so.
So they gave it their all, you know.
Brian Lynn wrote in to say, "I had several Power Records as a kid, though I don't remember exactly which ones I had. The only one I recall clearly is the stacked card story with Batman and the Joker that you covered in episode 13. I think it's safe to say that my parents would have never bought me a Conan record, which is a shame because these four stories were excellent." Yeah, I think I might have even told the story once that back when I was a kid and we were up vacationing in the mountains, I had to buy myself an issue of Savage Sword of Conan, and I had to basically sneak it in among all my other comics because it had a painted cover by Joe Jusco of Conan and a girl in an impossibly tiny bikini. And I'm like, I know there's no way I'm getting this in the house. So I had to kind of just stick it in the middle of all my other regular comics. Conan always had just that slight edge to it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, but if your parents had seen these Power Records we covered this time with the tiny bikinis and the buxom Amazon woman.
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't pay attention. I think they assumed it was safe, you know, of course.
Exactly, yeah. David Walker wrote in to say, "Reason the music sounds like Star Wars that I'm pretty sure it was Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. This was used as a temp track for some scenes on Tatooine when George Lucas was trying to show John Williams what he wanted. You might also know it as the dinosaur bit in Fantasia, as it had this as the music too." Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but it makes total sense. It's all based on the same thing. So thank you, David. I love that info. Mike Bridges writes in to say, "Always enjoyed the Power Records podcast. Probably my favorite of any podcast. It is always a treat, and this one was great as well. I think by the time most of the records they were putting out were very kid-oriented, Peter Pan, it would have been nice if this had actually been a Power Record. Not sure why they stopped using the Power Records icon. Would have made this one a bit more cool." Yeah, you know, all these mysterious decisions made by this company, lost to the ages. I'm still not giving up totally on my Power Records coffee table book, but, you know, probably have to be realistic. It's never going to actually get it made, but, you know, maybe someday. And then
crowdfund it.
Yeah, there we go. And then finally, we have a comment from Lindsay Werner who says, "One thing I had to say about this last story. I had a totally different thought. The guy said he took the sick and elderly and Worm, can't remember his name, was disfigured. I was completely under the impression that Conan couldn't enter because he was physically prime and able. I also really found that the whole pocket heaven dimension ominous, but that's me. I still think that was a trap. I took it as a freaking, it took a freaking slave trader and made him whole. Nuh-uh. Something's up with that." I never thought about any of that stuff, Lindsay. That's interesting angles that, yeah, Conan can't get in because he is, like, at his peak physical perfection or something like that. So not a bad way of looking at it.
It's true. So, it's like the kind of Star Trek V version of that story.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I need my pain, Grom. So that can do for the listener feedback. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I apologize for previous episodes where we didn't get to the feedback. That's my fault. I'm supposed to compile the stuff, and I was just too lazy. But I finally realized we really do need to get to it. So I think, unless you have anything else, Chris, I think that's going to wrap it up, this Wonder Woman episode of Power Record.
Yeah, I'm going to go get in line to see the Wonder Woman movie.
All right, awesome. I'll be right there, right behind you. So where can people find you here on the network?
Oh, I'm on Supermates. I'm on Nightcast. I pop up here and there. Occasionally I do a Where Does He Get Those Wonderful Toys on FW Presents. So I'll show up eventually on something. You know, I'll probably sneak into Heroes Points at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, you can find me, of course, on Fire and Water and Film and Water and Who's Who whenever that comes back, and Pod Dylan and Treasury Cast, and oh my God, that's too many shows. So you can find all of our shows over on the network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave a comment, and please leave us an iTunes review. We haven't gone through the iTunes reviews. We need to go through that maybe for the next episode, is go and dig into those, because those will help get the show noticed and stuff. So I think that's going to do it. Everybody go out and see Wonder Woman. We're all very excited about it. Hope you enjoyed these three adventures. So I guess that is going to do it. So until the next episode of the Power Records Podcast, drop the needle
and turn the page.
Come, Robin, into the Batmobile and home.